We are in a great period of change. And she said there were two times this happened. One is 4 centuries after the birth of Jesus, and the death of Jesus, I should say, and his teachings and so on. And women decided that the situation, communities around the Mediterranean were going to pot. There was immorality. Men couldn't seem to get it together. So they moved out so that they could observe the situation from a distance. That's one time. She calls this an axial age. Second time was in the 13th and 14th centuries when the religious orders began among women. They went into the religious orders and there they observed what was happening in the communities. And interestingly, she took a lot of her research out of the Roman Catholic archives. And now she claims that the third situation is now, with our new technological age, the continual using up of the earth and so on, that we're in another axial age. Now, some women move out, but I like to illustrate with Holden here. This is kind of a community that moved out of the city or the mainstream out into the mountains. And we reflect here on what we see happening in our communities, whether it be local, state, a national, or world. And changes, we recognize that two things that we're really concerned about here, it seemed to be this week anyway, and I think most of the time for the environmental changes. College is very, why? Because those affect women's communities. Look at all our communities, but here we're talking about women. If we don't have survival in our environment, we will die. Our children will die. Same thing. So that's why I think the two are very closely related. And I want to repeat again that feminism is a worldwide movement. And if we understand ourselves in that context, then we can deal with our own local issues. And we have always been a worldwide movement, even since the 18th century when so-called feminists kind of came into it, or probably even before that. And we were international during the suffrage time, women getting the right to vote. We still have some problems a little bit with that one. And it was international when we had the International Women's Decade, and I attended 3 conferences within that period of time. It was just fascinating. It just moved my mind from my local community to the international community, and I learned a lot. What I would like to do, though, is to once again emphasize that the women's movement is not just for women. And from today, I'd like to talk a little bit more about feminist theology. I'm not a professional religious person. Your theology will be as good as my theology. But there are many feminist theologians nowadays. And next week, my husband and I will be looking and examining a book together called Christianity, Patriarchy, and Abuse. And there are 4 theologians, women, from this area that have written in it. And it's a very interesting, they raise very interesting questions about our religious theology and all, and it's not a denominational thing. It's an ecumenical book, Lutheran, Methodist, Presbyterian, Roman Catholic, women, and I may have left some out. But feminist theology is liberation theology because it is concerned with the liberation of all people to become full participants in the human society. Men could write feminist theology because there are many men who are trying to do the same thing. Now, would anybody like to comment before we kind of go on? We have one man today. Men are very silent in this class. Except for one man who started out right in the beginning. I believe the man is the head of the household.
I'm here to see if I can learn two things. Why the ordained Lutheran pastors who are women have such difficulty getting calls as senior pastors, and also what the Missouri Lutheran Church is doing about giving women equal positions.
Yeah, see, the problems are there. Anybody else?
Well, I just wanted to say that I agree with your position that feminism is about liberation, and it doesn't mean you have to be a female to be a feminist.
Okay, let's go on. I'm great for history. I'm not a historian. I'm really a sociologist, but I'm great for history because I think that's where we really learn. And I want to read you something that's a little bit started. I want to read the whole thing because in 1974, when we found out in Seattle there was going to be an international a year of the woman, International Woman's Year, we had a group called the Coalition of Women in Religion, and they were excited. This was a feminist group. Someone had given us, and I was part of it, a copy of Elizabeth Cady Stanton's Bible, Woman's Bible, and we got busy and we were going to publish that. And the first group we went to back us was the Church Council of Greater Seattle. And that, I will explain that my husband was the executive of the Church Council of Greater Seattle. So the board and he and everybody, and at that time, I think there weren't 50, right now there's 50% women, 50% men. When he first went there was about 4 women on the board. Well, now it's a great big board, so now it's, you can see the change, but this was way back. He went in 1970, this is 1974. Well, I took it to him and the board and got nowhere. So they decided to strike out on their own. And we did. We published the Woman's Bible. Here's the camera. The Bible itself is kind of a unique book, other than just having that came out of the early 1800s, or late 1800s. Other than that, it's not really a modern book. It's interesting. But we are still selling that book all over the United States, and we have made more than $10,000. Now, those people turned us down. That wasn't a good idea. They could have, but that's a very, we did that. Then we found we would send some people to Mexico City, and we worked on three issues, which was peace, economic development, and equality. And through that, we published a peace booklet. We gave some plays, and we were always working on equality, but we created a woman's basic position for peace. Why I'm saying is 1974, because we just moved into surround Iraq. So let's bring it up. We're not talking about anything we don't know. It says we are the and we're also talking about the relationship between the earth, environment, and women. We are the daughters of one mother, the earth. Our family is the human family. And every member of this family has emerged from the body and care of a woman. As the prime nurturers of life, we assert that everyone born has the right to be treated with proper respect for human dignity and the precious gift of life. No individual or group of individuals has the privilege of abridging this right. Injustice is a violation of this basic human right. And by this violation, injustice provokes a violent action. Human dignity demands that everyone be free to hold and express all manner of beliefs without fear of suppression. Injustice violates this right in the name of superior religious, political, philosophical, economic, and social beliefs. Human dignity demands that everyone born be allowed to develop in accordance with individual mental, physical, and spiritual capacity. Injustice restricts this development on the pretext of sex, race, socioeconomic status, occupation of parents, religion, and nationality. Our governments, I'm skipping a little here, our governments have only one right: to govern in the best interest of the governed. War is never in the best interest of the governed. By declaring war, those in the government usurp the power of life and death over their citizens. War not only jeopardizes the basic right to live, it debases our very selves by substituting for our human values and the individual conscience a pernicious war mystique that denies the humanity of the enemy and promotes crimes of destruction against people, their social organization, and the good green earth itself. Now, none of our bad... Yeah.
Read again the first, the only right the government has.
Our governments have only one right.
Yeah.
To govern in the best interest of the governed.
Okay.
Then we say, I'm skipping again. None of our values can survive unless we preserve our mother, the earth. There is no honor in a burnt out shell. There is no freedom of speech when the only voice is the wail of the wind in desolate places. Without a fair distribution of the earth's resources, there can only be a smoldering resentment that is a constant threat to peace. Unless we care more for the equality in life, the equality of death may well be forced upon us. And there's more to that. But I'd like to kind of move into some questions, unless you have any statements on that.
What was that reading from?
Sorry. Well, we called the Woman's Basic Position for Peace. And we created this in a peace group we established in 1974 to take to Mexico City. That's when we did that. Do you have any comments on that? That's pretty well, we're really kind of, this is a little, yeah, do you all agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
well, it's interesting, I mean, this is, maybe it's, yeah, it's peripheral, but like if you look at the issue in Saudi Arabia now that, you know, the troops have moved in there, probably most people in this country were not aware truly of what happens there, that is, women are not allowed to drive and so forth. And I just read in yesterday's New York Times, Wednesday's New York Times, I was reading in the library, that because the situation is getting desperate and they, you know, the army has only men, and there are a lot of businesses and a lot of things that only men do because women are not allowed to work where, like, you can work in a gynecologist's office because only women come there. Mm-hmm. But say other kinds of medical professions where men would be the clients, women are not allowed to work as nurses even.
Mm-hmm.
There. And they're really feeling the pinch now. So they've relaxed some of those rules.
Oh, is that a fact?
Yeah.
Hmm? That's a fact, and they're relaxing some of the rules.
They're relaxing the rules because they've been pushed into this situation, which in the long term means emancipation for all these women who were never allowed to show their face and were never allowed to do and pursue a profession that they really were capable of because there was a, you know, rule against it. And I think
now the rule, is this religiously connected?
I believe, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
but it's in, they've been comparing all the, you know, I've been watching things where they've been showing all the American army having women in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been sort of protecting their women from these foreign women that are coming in. And, you know, sort of, they're in different camps, so to speak. They don't really have opportunity to interact. This is going to be a major breakthrough as far as Saudi women go.
But it's not too bad. It has to come this way. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
If one calls this a challenge to change, I wouldn't. That's what they're being challenged by the American U.S. Armed Forces.
Well, right now it's a challenge to change for survival in that country.
That's right.
Because right.
And what's happening is that a lot of the positions, the reason a lot of foreigners used to come and work at a lot of jobs in Saudi was because of this, is because they couldn't fill the positions there because a large body of the workforce consists of women who were not qualified to work in those jobs. Or were not allowed to. They did probably qualify, but couldn't work. So now, because of this mass exodus of foreigners from that country, there is a desperate need for them to provide these services, and that's how come they're letting the women in.
That's what I say about America, too. World War II is a big thing of bringing women out of the home.
Any other guy? It's an interesting thing when you figure how many arguments they probably put up in Saudi Arabia. In fact, when I was at these conferences, you see, there were Saudi Arabian women there, and they were battling all the arguments of the world that Saudi Arabia put up to keep women in their place. And that's a very interesting thing, how easily those things can be forgotten in a moment of emergency, so-called.
Well, the other thing I was thinking in relation to religion, something I'd never really thought of, is having grown up in India. I mean, it's just one of those things that the sky is blue and you just accept that. That I realize is not, there's never ever been any mention of, the priests in the temple or even any of that. It's just unthinkable, and it's still unthinkable that a woman could have that position
and be a priest.
Right. Not even in the realm of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's what people learned, U.S. women learned. They went to Mexico City filled with their agenda for equality and found that other women came with other agendas. African women were wanted to get, South African women wanted to get rid of apartheid, and other women were concerned about economics. But we're going to get to yours and your question of the ordination, or you brought it up, that there are lots of women in the world who cannot take their equal, what they feel would be equal partnership in religion. And I have a statement here, really, an interpretation, which I think might give us a little clue, at least here in this country. This is written by a good friend of mine, and she took this story. How many were here Sunday? When we had the story of the woman who went to Jesus when he was inside in Tyre, and they took her story, and he went, and she puts it in a very interesting way. In those days, Jesus was working very hard, without any break or vacation. He was perhaps exhausted physically and emotionally. He wanted some time out and a place, quiet place to rest without TV or the telephone ringing. So he went outside of his town to a Gentile territory called Sidon and Tyre, expecting no one there would know him and bother his resting. But his hope for a rest was interrupted by a Gentile woman, a Canaanite, who came to Jesus to cure her daughter, who was sick in bed, being possessed by the demon, evil spirit. In so-called Clementine literature, this mother was named Justa, and the daughter, Bernice. Justa, the mother, was determined to do anything to free Bernice from the demon. So the conversation goes on between Jesus and the mother until she gets what she wants. To understand the story fully, we must understand the sociocultural and religious background of the first century world. First, in those days, Jews considered themselves as God-chosen superior people, and they called all others Gentiles or dogs, whom they arrogantly despised. Secondly, the first century culture was male-dominated, one that discriminated against women. Women were considered to be possessions of men. The wife, his wife, with any reason or no reason. Jewish man's morning prayer included thanking God for not creating him as a woman, a slave, or a Gentile. Women were not allowed to read the Bible in church. They were oppressed in the home, society, and Jewish synagogue. Third, in the first century, to be sick meant to be possessed by the demon, evil spirit. Demons were considered obnoxious, unclean, corrupt, ugly, sinful. Demon-possessed condition could have been caused by economic, social, cultural, political deprivation, exploitation, and oppression. It could also mean broken hope, dignity, and identity, alienation, and prejudice and discrimination. Now, when Justa went to Jesus, he turned to her and said, "First let the children eat," the Jewish children, "eat all they want, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." And what he was saying, as we learned, he was saying, give it to the Jewish people first. And they are fed, and it is not right to toss it to the Canaanites. How shall we understand Jesus, such a cold, insulting, and discriminatory remark that doesn't sound like Jesus at all? And then she goes into many scholars' interpretation. But she ends with, this is my friend, the clergywoman, "I am not going to let Jesus off that easily." Now this is a clergywoman speaking. Let us hear the response of the woman. Key points of the test. No matter what the reason may have been, Jesus said what he said, and it sounded terrible. Justice seemed to understand what Jesus was exactly saying and responded well. "Yes, Lord, let's assume we are dogs. Even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. The dogs also need the same salvation like everyone else," the dogs, the Canaanites. Justa's love and compassion and commitment for her sick daughter were so deep, and her desire to free her from the demonic condition was so desperate, she wasn't going to give up. She wanted to confront Jesus' discriminatory remark. She spoke up for her equality to receive the same love and salvation as the Jews. Her remark became the challenge to Jewish theology. Salvation was for Jews alone. Discriminatory and oppressive Jewish culture on women was challenged. All of this was challenged, not by a great theologian, but by a woman, a Gentile woman, who was called dog in a society where questioning or challenging Jesus by a woman was unthinkable. But surprisingly, the response of Jesus was not shutting her off like an ordinary, and she had like an ordinary man would. Jesus, who seemed to share the Jewish faith and values in God's salvation for Jews alone, had to listen to this woman. He shocked Justa and ourselves today by saying, "Justa, you have a point there. I must hear you. What you have said did hit me, challenge me. You are right. I need to change the direction of my mission and include you also." Now, what does this say to you?
I say it's a wrong interpretation. I don't buy it.
You don't.
No.
So and from your view, you don't buy it because you say Jesus would never do that.
No.
Or what?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying his word is being interpreted because from the beginning, he was here to save all people. He died for all of us. He's the only inclusive person that has ever existed. He's the only one that had. He wasn't excluding anyone. He died for everyone.
Well, he's not dead yet in this story. Now, where's he still living? All right, now let's have a few other comments.
let's hear from him, Mr. Olson.
I can't comment on that because I didn't follow it that well.
Well, that's an interesting remark. You see, because this is the clue to change. This is the clue to change.
Could we read that portion of the Bible?
Well, if you'd like to.
Is it very long, or is it? Could we take a look at it now?
Go ahead.
Where is it?
Well, that's what we'll have to hunt for. Let me get it right here.
The disciples said,
it's in Matthew.
Send this woman away. And Jesus says, I cannot turn her away.
Here, let's take Mark 7, 24 to 30.
And it was
that's not
faith
too long.
That made her whole.
Mark, you say?
Yeah.
And that's what Jesus said to her.
Mark, what?
Well, she has it down here. Mark 7, 24. 7, 24. Well, it's beginning with 25. But immediately a woman, he was in this house, immediately a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an unclean spirit heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. Well, here it says a woman was a Greek by birth. And she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, let the little children be fed, for it's not right to take the children's bread. But she answered him, yes, Lord, even the dogs under the table. It's about the same thing. And there are other interpretations. But what I'm saying is that this woman, this clergy woman, interpreted it this way. She goes back and says, she says that there are many scholars that interpret it this way. Woman, you have great faith, spiritualized, and others reduce the text to exorcism. Some scholars suggest that Jesus' words to her were to test her faith, or were just an ironical reference to the Jewish prejudice at the time. Other scholars say that Jesus playfully used the words for dogs, meaning puppies or doggies. Still, other scholars say that it was not originally connected with Jesus at all, crept into the gospel, a tradition later. Some others say that the Gentile woman used the word dog first in humility, and Jesus repeated it. And then Jean says, but I'm not going to let Jesus off the hook for you. Now, why aren't we getting more? Why doesn't the Missouri Synod Lutheran want women as ordained clergy? There's your answer right there. Then Jean goes on with her interpretation. Could it be that when women get into the pulpit, they will see the Bible from a different position? Different?
Oh, I think all women present different views, just like different men present different views on things. And I've heard a lot of pastors. You said something about you were going to start a congregation and you were thinking of calling it Mary Magdalene. Everybody's going for Mary Magdalene these days, it seems like. Because just recently I heard a pastor say, wouldn't it be good to hear this from Mary Magdalene's viewpoint? And I think women's viewpoints have always been treasured, I think Jesus treasured their viewpoints. Jesus treasured women. He put them in very high places.
Well, yes. Mary Magdalene was a dysfunctional woman, and this will be a church of dysfunctional women. And they will name their own church.
So it tickled me the day you mentioned that, because I just had this pastor in Port Angeles tell me, wouldn't it be good if we had Mary Magdalene's view, or have her tell this story today? And I think it is important that women have their input.
Well, that...
But they did this much before they became pastors.
Well, I think that that's going to be our problem next week. We're going to look at a book, or that's going to be our issue next week, where the today's society, the Bible, is going to be interpreted by women. And we're going to do that next week, by women. And one reason that the church is starting is because the Church of Mary Magdalene, if I'll use it that phrase, is because those women do not want to go into the denominational churches that we have today. They have been painful to those women. And that's why we've had to start the new one. So, or why we're starting
the new one. But isn't this sort of going segregation again?
You bet.
Jen, could you explain what you mean by dysfunctional women? Because it can mean a lot of things.
Okay, the dysfunctional woman, as I read in a little bit, is one who cannot accommodate herself, perhaps, to the ongoing structures that we have in society. We have had young women who are on drugs. I would call them dysfunctional. We have women who are living on the streets. They won't be women necessarily with a mental disease as classified by the government. Women who are schizophrenic, or they could be, or manic depressive, they may have some of those things. But by and large, they're just depressed women for many reasons. One, we worked with one with the epileptic. She was a teacher, and the school system wouldn't hire her anymore. She ended on the street, sleeping on the street. And on the street, she became sexually abused, and so on and so forth. And this woman I just read, through her, she is a mental health, licensed mental health, but it wasn't through that. Through her working with her and this type of woman, and the way we're going to conduct the church, they went off. She got a job teaching this year.
Good.
You know, it was another, there was a great deal of self-esteem lost. And I think that when a woman has lost her self-esteem, she's a dysfunctional woman. And when women can't become ordained for some reason, then, well, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. So it could also, I just wanted to clarify that, it could also mean that any woman, like you were saying, that doesn't feel like she fits in the sort of the mainstream, could get that label, because a feminist
could have that label. And I've seen many women depressed, and I'll go off, you know, into retreats because they've entered the mainstream of our institutional structures. And it's going back to yours, is that I want to move on a little bit, and because everyone has an opinion of how we can pull ourselves out of this so-called mess, the environment or the war situation or the overpopulation or women becoming ordained. And we hear it all over here, you know, prayer. Well, if we just lived more economic, you know, frugally, if we got into action groups, if we just did such and such. And I was interested in noting that the three women that I like, one is Elise Boulding, claims that we need to emphasize goodness. Goodness. We're lacking goodness in our societies, our communities, so on. Barbara Tuchman, or Tuchman, or Tuchman, however you pronounce that, says that we will only change our societies when we become fearful. Fear is the only thing in history. She's a historian that has changed society. And Barbara Ward, an economist, and these are women that wrote quite a bit a few years ago and looked to the future. They were futuristic. They're futuristic women. She said that love, well, that's interesting coming from an economist, but I'd like to present something that I'd like to have you discuss, and this comes out of the mouth of a man I work with, that we do what we call a fast forum, kind of an opinionaire. He believes in the old-fashioned forum type and that you have in the little white, what was it? What do you call those in New England, the little white court, not a courthouse, we call a courthouse, the little centers where they went in the early days and discussed all the problems.
Town hall,
the community. And this is his answer to town hall and big, large populations, opinionary, put you, send it back in, it's tabulated, computerized. But in his book, he talks about the social conspiracy. Have you heard of that term before? Social conspiracy? And the social conspiracy, in our definition, is one in which our institutional structures hinder people from really having an input into society and their communities to make changes. And the best example I can give is that for years we've worked to get women ordained and into the church for one place, or maybe into the medical profession, or in the legal profession. And what happens? Sometimes we never see those women again. They're not working with the women's movement. In the church, the institution that I know the best, we have women who, they are busy. I just put it down. Committee assignments, church services. They are maintaining the denominational structure. They're busy marrying, baptizing, bearing. They work on missionary projects and drive for money. They don't have time to come back into the community and look at it and say, now, where could we change here? They're caught up in what he calls the social conspiracy. Institutional structures that basically have been created by patriarchy, supported by men and women. And there's no room for change.
By their own example, though, aren't they changing?
Oh,
if they're going out in the community and working and serving the community, aren't they being good examples of what you're talking about?
Well, haven't we always served the community? Even back in
You're saying in specific professions.
Now, I'm not talking about serving anybody. I'm talking about making dramatic social change to accommodate our earth so that we can survive. I'm talking about making a statement.
But a woman is out there doing all those things in a different position that you have had her before.
Good point. Good point.
So, isn't... I think she's doing just as much for your woman's drive as she would be coming back into your organization, don't you?
I don't have an organization. I'm talking about women in the community. I'm talking about all women.
So you got to get out of that.
No, you just said something. They don't come back, and that's what
into the woman's community and see where change could be. They are caught in the structure, maintaining it.
They're in the mainstream. They are doing their professions, they're building their careers. They may have gotten a lot of support when they were starting. Some other women that were mentors that believed in them, that said, you need to do this. And then they get so busy and they get so caught up in their own individual lives that they no longer see that a lot of stuff that is happening
to them
is actually a much bigger issue than their own experience. That, for instance, if they're married and have children, that there are a lot of women that are struggling with the fact that even though they have the career, they're still doing the majority of the housework, and they don't come back to either to contribute more to the movement, and I think that's what you were talking about, or to see that some of the issues that they're struggling with are really political, and they could get more support, and they could actually do something about it.
Don't you think what she's saying is that they're very conspicuous as they take on their legal duties of what they're doing? So it appears that women are in higher places than they've been before.
Yeah, sure.
In Twin Cities, we've got about 10 women judges now, and I think the fact we have women judges in high places like that really shows that they are advancing the cause of women taking positions that
I think what Jen is saying is that what she would like is if for those women judges to remember where they came from and who supported them, and that it would be helpful if they would go back to where they came from so that they could be sort of more outspoken, maybe in a political way, rather than just that's my interpretation, and you can say if that's what you meant. that they could do something about it going back.
Is that a good statement? Is that a general statement? Aren't they doing that?
No, I don't know. In my profession, I'm a scientist, and It's hard for somebody who's starting out, you know, at the beginning levels. Okay, and I work in an institution which is pretty male dominated, and I noticed that the women who made it up the ranks and have achieved seniority and are now serving on some committees could actually, you know, do something more than they actually do. For those of us who are starting out, you know, but it doesn't seem to be there, and it's very disillusioning because, and that's a stand that, you know, some of the younger women that I know that we've taken is that we want to make it easier for the generations to come, and I sure hope that, you know, when we get to that point, we don't forget, you know, what's happening. But having been caught between the student and the senior professors, I know what you're addressing. So, you know, I think that's probably true in other professions too. Part of it is the pressures of each of these professions, you know, that as it is, it's hard enough to get up there, and then once you get there, it's like, it's do all you can, be super mom and be everything else, and, you know, keep getting those, you know, keep advancing. I think that you can get caught up in that very easily.
See, that's the social conspiracy.
Yes.
And so that here you have 50% of the world, 50% of our society, has moved right into the role modeling of patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
See, that is not a change. We're talking here change. And going back to Jesus, the demonstration that my friend wanted to make was that Jesus was not afraid to change. That is a marvelous statement. See, and we are not afraid to take the risk to change. And that's probably the biggest hindrance in our communities today, is that we do find safety in the institutional structures as we know them.
But don't you think that you do have to change? You have to clean your own home before you can clean the outside world. And if these women indeed came out into this world and changed exteriorly, but never changed the inside, how can you expect them to come back and serve if they don't have the humility that they can get back and give? It's not there.
Anybody have an answer to that?
I don't know. What do you mean when you say change inside? Meaning awareness?
Change the Christ inside, not the person that's out here that you visually and verbally change. Because we can all change. I mean, if I've been given a program, I can change. But I have to also be willing to change inside, take myself inside out and take a look at myself. Why wouldn't I come back? Maybe I don't want to. Self-centered and selfishness.
Yeah. Now, she mentioned just a little bit of that. I thought it was going to go deeper than that. She mentioned love and goodness. Two women spoke about love and goodness. And that now to me was getting to the change of the heart. Because of the change of the heart and the love of Jesus, you do this. And I thought she was going to go deeper into that, but she just mentioned those two words, that one said love and one said goodness.
And one said fear.
And fear.
And I'm saying social conspiracy, where it's against us. I find that treading on dangerous ground for this reason. It's passing judgment of the fact that these women may be caught and not... They are, they feel that you're caught, see? It's trapped, it's an entrapment. And men are caught. I know because I live with people who work at Boeing. Every time I pick up the paper lately, we find that Boeing has broken the law, taken advantage of some situation, has had working conditions where they were really quite dangerous. And yet Boeing has been our most respected business. I know lots of women who work in Boeing. Lots of wonderful men who work in Boeing. But they work because it is a place, you know, they have to survive. I mean, that's the reason, surviving. I've got to have money. And yesterday or the day before, I read all these different things that happened to the Exxon making several million dollars and $1 billion, and still we have a crummy shore up there, and how we have the SNL, no control, and all of that. And yet you'll find women and men working in all these situations. So we're still back saying challenge to change. I do agree. I think you've made a good point that we get it out of our religious community or whatever that religion might be. That's our value structure.
It doesn't have to be though. It doesn't have. I think it's one possible and a very important value structure, mm-hmm. clearly. Mm-hmm. But I could be
an atheist.
Well, yeah, an atheist or a non denominational person with a Christian upbringing, and I might take a much more political position and come to similar action, but not do it because of Christ inside, because that is not something that I would find that easy to ascribe to. But we could be on the same committee, and we could take the same kind of action.
That's right, and you wouldn't necessarily have to be a Christian either.
Right.
You know, there's no holds barred. We're talking really about the feminist movement.
Yeah.
And we call ourselves religious feminists because we're probably out of that background. And some people go further, we're Christian feminists, you know. But generally speaking, we're talking about putting women into positions from their perspective. Now, that's been argued too. What is different between man and a woman? Why are women different? Men will say. Well, do you think we wouldn't have had World War II, or if a woman had been running the world, or do you think that we wouldn't go into Saudi Arabia if they'd call the women and ask them? Well, women are justifying themselves in that way by saying that we have a different perspective. We give life. That's why I read that. I know the women who wrote this. They're very ordinary women, but they did write this. We are the daughters of one mother, the earth. They didn't speak of a lot of religion. Our family is the human family, and every member of this family bears the body and care of a woman as a prime nurturers of life. They do say they are the prime nurturers of life. Women kind of have had that badge. Men have accepted that. So when women come to a situation where they think they're losing, they're not going to survive, and at least Boldy points this out, when women think they're losing and their children won't have a future, they come forward. They don't have to examine themselves. They just know.
Yeah, but it's still pretty striking that with this all this about the maternity leave bill, we're not seeing the kind of movement.
No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, it's appalling that in 1990, something like this is happening. Women are just asking to keep their job while they go to have a baby, and it's an issue.
That's when we bring it down close to home,
yeah.
Community. It's still part of the same.
Men want the leave too.
Pardon?
Yeah, but that.
No, they do get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Men and women do get it.
But they fought for that too. But see, here I'm hearing, oh, okay, we are the mother of the earth. So we are different. But we don't want to be different. We're going to go fight a war. We want to go out there on the front lines and fight that war too. The women in the military, they don't want to sit at home and just be on desk jobs. They want to be out there on the front lines. They want to be equal with men. And I say equal pay and all that, but women and men are different, like you're saying right now. And it has been said, if women fought the war, it would be a much more fierce war than men could ever fight. Because of that very thing of the family, that feeling towards protecting the family, the woman will fight much more fiercely for her family. So if they were on the front line, it would be a lot fiercer war.
But they might never get to war to begin with.
They're getting closer all the time.
Yeah, but it might be that women would be better would be much more willing to negotiate, because relationships tend to be much more important to women than they are to men.
Yeah, that's
true. So being able to talk about things tends to be much more important to women than to men in general. There are obviously exceptions.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see what the economic summit would be like if there were,
Women held an alternative economic summit, which we never heard about in paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started my other sessions, that was the one I asked, would you take a TV station or would you take the $500 million and put it into ecology, which we were having two women who own a big television thing.
There's another part to that question.
What is
it? Who are you going to sell that to? You could sell it to a person that would do a lot of damage, more damage with that TV station than you could do for the ecology with that $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that would be an important factor, is who am I going to sell that to for $500 million?
But I think that what we're talking about is that we're really looking at the world and how women... most of these conferences and things, I bet no one here knew there was an economic summit.
What about the environmental conference when the Prime Minister of Norway was a leader in advancing a woman who was led the advancement on what she thought ought to happen environmentally in the world? And also Golda Meir, when she was the leader of Israel, was at all these conferences. The Prime Minister of England now is at all these conferences. Women have a lot of input at very high places. You don't seem to be giving credit to the input that women have right now in the world.
But they have I grew up in India. We had a woman prime minister.
Okay.
Okay, fine. That's fine.
Was it any different than when you had a man?
No, but the issue is, I mean, that's the essence of the issue that's being discussed here. Indira Gandhi got to that position because her father groomed her for that position.
Okay.
And he took her with her all over the world because it was pretty clear in his mind that she was going to be prime minister. And so she was privileged to have that position.
But you're saying she thought like a man. Because he ruled no differently.
Mm-hmm. That's
okay,
right.
Well,
that's
probably what, that may have been what's happening with these other world leaders that are women. They're thinking like men.
They have to play the boys' game.
Good point. See, now that's the whole thing we're getting at. When women come in, that is their only way of working. They have their role models on institutions and how to do government is the male model.
Okay, these women now they mentioned in Minnesota who are judges, do you think when they sit on the bench that they think like men or like women?
I think that I think that they would like come out of a different background. I can't judge those people. All we know is how we women today, just from 1974 when all this started, except for that type of thing, you know, we've got women here and women here. The woman's position in the world today, now I'm talking about overall, is worse off than it was when the decade started.
I guess I can't agree with that. If you look at the United States government, they have quotas on scientists everywhere. In the Forest Service, women are being promoted over men rapidly in all of these avenues where they haven't been in influential positions before. This is happening even in industries like Boeing, Honeywell, 3M, anyone that does work for the government. Have quotas, they have to promote women, and oftentimes they get promoted beyond their ability, their capabilities, which is a tragedy because then they do a disservice to all women when that happens.
Yeah, but this is an issue for minorities too, okay? I mean, I think
But with
minority, like, I mean, and I'm gonna go back and illustrate with an example from India because we have the untouchable class, the class that once upon a time was the lowest caste and, you know, was classified as untouchable because they cleaned the streets and they cleaned the toilets and, you know, they were not permitted into society. So years later, when all the reform occurred, out of all that guilt for all those years, they said, okay, 10% of all seats for any job are going to be reserved for minority, okay? So I had classmates at a point where 50% of my classmates were minority. And these, I was in a graduate level biochemistry class, and these people did not know how to write the structure of a simple compound, and they had made it to that point because they walked in, you know. But I couldn't blame them because they did not have the background I did. They did not have the primary and secondary education that I did. They did not have that support at an earlier age, which is crucial. And I think that is a step one has to go through before we get to the next step. And that's what's happening with women here. Yes, right now, to men it may seem very unfair that these women are being promoted over them. But that's something we're going to have to go through in order to get to the next step.
How does that address what she just said, that they're worse off now than you were 10 years ago?
That's because, as I said, you look at the international world, you look at our environment, we're having... our world is less livable. We're using up our resources faster than we did in 1975. I mean, we're just on this kind of a bench.
Well, that's confusing whether we're talking about women or we're talking about the environment or men.
No, it isn't. It isn't. That's what I'm trying to
say
here.
Well, are you blaming men for using up the environment or what?
I'm blaming the patriarchal structure, the way we operate. We operate that way.
Well,
if we're going
that,
to change,
you're losing me about the patriarchal structure. I don't follow you there.
Well, the patriarchal structure, the way most women refer to, are institutions that they have been created over periods of time. We have it's a little difficult to understand, but that's the way it is. That we go into our institutions And granted, I'm hoping that as these women get into those institutions and conscientious men, that they will change. They will change. But the question I have today, when we look from 1985 to where we are today, in the environment, in women's issues, hasn't changed at all. Oh, yeah, the judge, the this, the that. We're talking about a way of living, a way of operation, a new way of living, and recognizing that we have to change. We have recognized ethnic groups to a degree, you know, but we went right into a country just this last 2 months without too much consent from those people. I wonder if we'd done that to England or Germany or wherever, just moved a whole army. What we've established is a base. We moved a whole army base into Saudi Arabia with very little consent of the people, if any. You know, and that's what I'm talking about.
The Saudi?
Saudi or U.S.
Okay, both. You're talking about both.
Yeah, we had no choice.
No choice. They just moved it. Now that in itself, no matter what the future brings, hopefully they'll get out of there, can cause a devastation. We've seen it. Vietnam, Central America, devastation. Mm-hmm. We can see it all through history. And not only that, the very interesting thing is we pride ourselves on our history.